You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Now, it's that time of year where we are trying to organize and prep and plan for the upcoming season, and some of the gear that we use takes batteries. Now, you should go visit your local Interstate Battery store or visit interstatebatteries.com to check out all the different varieties of batteries that they offer. They have truck batteries. They have batteries for your trail cameras. They have batteries for your rangefinder and everything else that is electronic that you use for your hunting equipment. They have batteries for that. InterstateBatteries.com. Awesome company. Check them out.
Welcome to the DIY Sportsman Podcast with your hosts, Garrett Prawl and Boudreaux Boswell.
I've been doing way too much summer scouting. I have a fear that if I do way too much, then I'll burn out before season comes in, then I won't even want to hunt. I don't know. Some of these spots I'm finding, like that buck bed I found, it gets me so excited for opening day when I slip in there one afternoon, and I'm going to have to be super stealthy and quiet. And, like, I mean, take me an hour for that last 50 yards to get to the tree, and then another 30 minutes or more to get in the tree quietly. So,
yeah, it's tough. I mean, you have to take some time off. I feel like you can't just go straight. Well, I suppose you could, but I mean, like you said, you can burn out a lot faster, especially how much work it is. All right, out there now to bust through all that stuff. It's way easier to get that work done in February, March.
I wish I'd done that. I mean, look at some of those spots I was out yesterday. It's so thick and green. You can't see 30 yards. And then I see the video of yours when you're out there in the winter or March, whenever it was, and you can see so clear out through there.
Oh, yeah.
It gives you a better perspective.
It's night and day. And plus, you're looking at what it looks like in October, November, December, not what it looks like in the first week of September.
Yeah, because September's going to be, it's going to pretty much look like it looks now. It'll start dropping a few, I guess.
Yeah, because it'll be probably, what, first week of October before the leaves are really in full change. And then
start turning.
By mid-late October, most of those leaves have fallen down.
Yeah, it's the maples are the ones that tend to drop first, isn't it? They turn orange and fire red.
Yeah, I mean, about the same time, all the aspens are starting to turn yellow, too.
Yeah, those will be one of the soonest, early ones, and then the maples. And a lot of the areas that I've scouted has, I'm not sure, were they aspens or birch or what they are. They're white bark. Some of them look like paper birch because they have the bark peeling. It looks like the stuff you could burn.
Yeah, that'd be your, and if it's got the little like red buds in the leaves, yeah, that's always kind of how I learned like birch versus poplar. You look at the...
Well, none of these are poplars.
I see a lot of poplars.
Unless they're a different variety of poplar, because what I know is like tulip poplars don't look like any of these trees here. People call them popples, and they're talking about birch or aspen or something.
Yeah, so aspen, I can't remember what kind of aspen it is. A certain kind of aspen that most people around here are call popple. Or poplar, either one. They're talking about that aspen.
But it's not really a poplar.
They're not talking about birch.
Yeah, but it's not a poplar tree.
It is.
Is it in the family?
Well, I guess I don't know.
Because I've heard,
I always assumed that a poplar and aspen of those species were the same thing.
If you've seen
thing.
A poplar tree, an actual, like a yellow or tulip poplar tree, they're dry land. They won't grow anywhere where these trees or these aspens are growing. And I've heard that since I've been up here. A lot of people call them popples. And then I hear people say poplar, and I'm thinking poplar, not these aspens I see. I mean, they might be in the same family. I don't know.
I usually call them aspens, but most people call it poplars or popples, either one. It's more common terminology.
I've heard popples a lot. So anyway, what are we talking about? Are you going to do an introduction or?
Yeah. So basically we're sitting here in my basement with Shane Simpson, recording a podcast, and Shane's been on here a couple times. You've done podcast on what? Turkey hunting before. You did a and podcast with us with
tracking,
Callie.
Yeah, tracking blood deer tracking. And
how did your turkey season finish up? I mean, how many birds did you either film or kill yourself? Or
I got 8 myself. And one was the wounded one I had to put down. So that really wasn't a hunt in a typical fashion. I mean, we were out there hunting, excuse me, and I saw the turkey across the field and it had a leg injury. And I knew if I got up and let it see me, that it would probably hunker down in the tall brush. And that's exactly what it did. And basically, I just walked over there and flushed it up and shot it. So other than that, I got 7 other ones in the traditional sense of hunting. And I filmed, I think, a total of 18 kills. With the, you know, counting the 8 I killed, so 10 other ones with other people. So it was a pretty good season. I wouldn't say it was my best, but it was right up there, top 3 probably. Yeah. As far as when I rank a season, I usually rank it not the number of birds we kill, but how consistent we were. You know, it seemed like every day or every other day we had a bird either shot at or killed. So I mean, it was like a 50% success. As far as if we didn't kill one today, tomorrow we were most likely going to kill one. So that was that's how I would rank it. It was very successful in the fact that pretty much if we went out in the woods, we had a good chance of having
opportunity.
One. Yeah, an opportunity. That's the word I'm saying. Yeah. Thanks.
I got to start figuring out a way to get more all-day hunts in the woods. I think that's my biggest issue. And the vast majority of them are, hey, I got, you know, wake up at 4 a.m., get out there for the roost basically before work, and then go back into work and then try and roost them again.
I don't know if you really need to concentrate on all day, and I tell a lot of people that. It's like, if you want to really, a lot of people, you know, they're how can I do something to be better at it or whatever? The more time you spend out there, obviously you're going to have more opportunities or chances at turkeys. And if it's on a day you can't hunt all day, then at least attempt to get out there to roost them. Because every time I roost a bird, I'd say it's more than half the next morning we kill this bird. I mean, it puts you in the driver's seat because you know exactly where he's at and you can get, you know, in a position to set up on him where he's likely going to go or where he wants to go. Whereas if you just go in there in the morning and you start owl hooting or trying to locate one, you want to get one to gobble, it's usually starting to get light then. Now you don't have the cover of darkness to move around. So if you can at least roost them, that really puts you in the driver's seat for the next morning.
Well, and a lot of my birds, that's how I've killed them, is I've gotten in there well before light, before anything's making any noise, and just set up and you know, maybe 1 out of 3 times they'll do what you think they're going to do, and the other 2 out of 3 times they fly over the next ridge and it's private land or whatever else.
That's why I don't like going to that spot you and I hunted right next to the river, because it's a one and done deal there. And if you can't convince them to come, because they normally roost across the river, if you can't convince them to fly over to where you're at, then and it's only a small chunk there that you really can't run a gun on.
Well, and all that other stuff too that I was trying to get on, that new stuff I was learning this year, is all the same type of deal. You hike in there, and if it didn't happen, if you went the one way or the other, it was like that was your opportunity. You might as well walk back another hour to get back to the truck.
And I used to hunt a lot of those small tracks like that, where you basically go in there and you try to get one to gobble, or you hunt it and it's a one and done deal, and you just hop around. And this past year, and maybe the year before that, I started on it. I've been concentrating on bigger tracks like whitewater down in southeast Minnesota. I hunted it quite a bit this year, and it's 20-something thousand acres or something like that.
I think it's bigger than that even.
Yeah, I mean, and so you don't have to hop in the truck and run over here. I mean, you can there, but some of the areas I would hunt, I would plot it out on the map. I'm like, okay, this is where I'm gonna start, and I'm gonna work this whole area here, and I've got all day, I can cover that. And most of the times I didn't make it a quarter of the way and we were killing birds. And we killed, I think, 3 birds, or 2 birds there, and had an opportunity at 1 other in that same area, and you know, not in the same spots, but you know,
the same line, same routes,
within 3 or 4 ridges.
Yeah,
we killed those birds. So I mean, that's kind of the strategy I went into this past spring, is looking for large chunks. Even like Mississippi and Tennessee, when I went out of state, you know, I wasn't necessarily looking for like, where's a spot that's going to have turkeys and I can get into. I wanted a big track, especially when you're out of state. You want to cover a lot of ground. That was my thinking going into it. And in Mississippi, we kayaked in there, and there was some pretty big chunks and covered some ground. I ended up getting one on the second morning or second day. It was like noon or 1 o'clock when I finally killed it. But that was the strategy I went this year, the big chunks.
Gotcha. So moving on into the topic of getting ready for deer season. Last year, you didn't really do a lot of deer hunting for yourself. It seemed like you did more.
I did more last year than I did the year prior. The year prior was my first year tracking deer with Callie, and so a lot of times I would be headed to the stand in the afternoon, and I'd get a call, and I'd just abort those hunting plans. This past fall, I told myself I was going to put dedicate more time for myself to hunting. I still didn't hunt as much as I normally do, but like I would go, say, to Wisconsin, and the year prior I would take Callie with me, and because where I was staying I could keep her down in a kennel, and if I got a call I would take it. Well, this past fall I was like, I'm going there, I'm leaving Callie at home. If somebody calls me, tough.
Yeah.
The first year I did, was it 38 tracks or somewhere along that line? Close to 40. This past year I did about 10 less tracks. And so it was, I guess, 10 extra days of hunting if I actually hunted them. So I did hunt a little bit more. And this year I'm going to at least hunt that much this year. Because, I mean, with Minnesota legalizing tracking dogs this fall, I won't have to travel as far. That was the biggest hurdle for me the past two seasons. I would drive all the way to Wisconsin, so I might be on the road for an hour and a half, 2 hours to get to a track. I imagine now that Minnesota is going to be legal this fall that I can run 30 minutes to a track and still maybe have time to hunt. You know, so
then, in terms of those days that you do have that you are going to give yourself, you're going to want to be pretty pinpoint plan, because you're not really have time to spend a few days to figure it out. You're trying to get a lot of that scouting done now, as much as you can at least.
Yeah, and I've been hunting these marshes and stuff, and that's what I'm concentrating on this year. I've been hunting them. I fell in love with them when I moved up here 11 years ago and I started hunting them. But I didn't target, like most people, if they're listening, probably, and they deer hunt, they know who Dan Infault is, and it is in his swamp bedding and buck bedding type of deal. And I've watched some of his videos, and I'm kind of using some of his strategies. You know, my scouting this year was to continue hunting marshes, but maybe try to target buck beds. It just seems intriguing to me to go in there and find them. And so I'm finding spots that I think are going to be good locations. I'm picking out specific trees. And so far I have about 10 or 15 spots that I've scouted through my scouting that I may hunt this one tree opening day. The next opportunity I get to hunt, I'll hunt this spot, and they may be, you know, 30 or 40 miles apart, but that's kind of how I'm going about it. Whereas in the past, when I hunted some of these public spots, I'd find a good travel corridor where I could shoot a doe or whatever. I didn't care what was coming through. I wanted to shoot a deer, and I would sit 3 days straight in that one tree, and then I'd move to another location and hunt it 3 days. And my thinking back then was, if I give a trail 3 days, odds are I'm gonna be over that trail on a day that a deer comes by. And that was kind of my strategy. So this year, I'm, like you said, I'm pinpointing locations. I may go in there and hunt it once, and then the next time I go to another area. And I'm not only focusing on buck bedding, but I'm also kind of focusing on areas that I'm gonna have a high likelihood of seeing a deer, period.
Yeah.
Or at least see them out there in the marsh, and I can kind of adjust,
because they're not always the same setups.
No, I mean, one's a small island with what looks like a buck bed on the end of it. Another one is just kind of a little bit higher ground. It's not even really an island. It's still mucky up in there, but way back behind it, some hardwoods, and there's a bed on the edge of one of those. So it kind of would be an island of sorts, but, and some of them are just good areas where there's a lot of trail traffic back and forth and intersections. So, I mean, but each one, I've specifically picked out a specific tree to hang my stand in. So when I go in there, based on the wind and everything, the conditions, I'll sneak in there quietly. And that's something I've really been lazy about in the past. When I go to a spot that I think's a travel corridor, I'm not really worried about deer being bedded near it.
Yeah.
So I'd just go in there and walk to it, hang my stand, didn't worry about too much about noise, and then right at dark, here comes a deer down the trail, you know. This year, I've not only I want to be quieter just because I don't want to risk bumping deer that are going to be close. I mean, but I think that's a good practice anyway. But the other thing is I will potentially be within one spot that's going to be like 40 yards from where the deer's bedded, and I think it's the best tree for the situation. And so I've got to be, you know, I was telling you earlier, it may take me an hour to close that last 40 yards to the tree, and it may take me another half hour or more to get into the tree just to be super slow and quiet, because once I get up 8 or 10 feet, I may be able to see into his bed. When I was there scouting, it didn't look like you could, but I wasn't up in a tree. Just from ground level, I was like, there's no way he's going to see me even at 40 yards, but that's kind of the one I'm going into this year.
I think one advantage you have over a lot of guys that are starting to pick up this style of hunting is, even if you haven't like had that focus in the past, like having had turkey hunted with you, like, you know, when you're getting on a bird, you know when to kind of turn the switch and get, you know, very precise in everything you're doing, and pick up on little things, and seeing how like all these leaves are, you know, the scratching is fresh. They just went through here. All these little kind of things that a lot of really good hunters, deer hunters anyway, they pick up on those little things. They're not just looking at the map and saying, hey, this is a spot that looks similar to what I saw on the DVD. So I feel like once you start applying these things, like, you're going to be able to pick it up pretty quick.
I hope so. I mean, and that's all woodsmanship. I mean, you look at, and I could touch on that a little bit. You know, there's a lot of people that downplay camo and this and that, and it's like, oh, the deer only see shades of gray, or they can see a little bit of blue. But I think about the bigger picture. There's other animals out there besides deer. There's turkeys, there's squirrels, there's songbirds. And there's all kinds of critters out there that can see color, for instance. That's why I, you know, and it may just be a mental thing for me, I want a camo pattern that's colored correctly for the what I'm hiding in, and look like what I'm trying to hide in. You know, a lot of people, they just want something that breaks up the outline because they're only worried about the deer. I'm thinking about the whole picture. Whether it's, you know, actually helps or not, you know, that's beside the point. It doesn't take any extra effort to pick a different pattern. You know, so, I mean, so that's kind of the things that I do when I'm out there. I mean, I'm looking at all the clues, and whether they help me or not, I try to, you know, apply them if I think they might help.
So what have you been doing in terms of your strategy for getting ready for this fall? Like, your exact, you've been walking around finding beds, obviously, but, like, what's step one? You're looking at the maps first, I'm assuming, aerial photos?
There's a lot that goes into it, and I'm sure a lot of people use the same strategy. You know, first of all, I'm looking at, you know, I'm trying to find chunks of public, and I'm concentrating on marshes mainly. The biggest thing is it deters other people from going in there. My biggest thing about hunting public land is solitude. I don't care that it's the biggest buck coming through or whatever. I want to be in a spot that gives me an opportunity to see deer and not see hunters. You know, I can go a week without killing a deer, but as long as I can go out there and it's peaceful and quiet and I don't have people going under me, that's a big deal for me. So I look for these big chunks of public that have places that people are not likely to go. Not to say they won't go, because I always seem to find an old deer stand, or like the one place I found a salt block out there on this island that was half mile out in the marsh. So, but that's the first thing I do, is look at a map, obviously, and I'm looking for, you know, like on Google Earth, I can go back in the timeline, look for deer trails, and see if they maintain these trails each year. And so then I call that I forgot the term I used on my map, but basically it's a trail that's used yearly. I mean, it's a highway.
It's like a perpetual annual type of trail.
Yeah, it's an annual trail. And then you got these other ones you'll see in the cattails that are here one year and then they fade away, and then 2 years later it's back again, but in a different route. So it's kind of sporadic. I'm not so concerned about those. And so I'm looking for those annual trails, and then I'm looking for places that I can get to, you know, and access these spots if I think they're going to be, you know, suitable spots. But I'm just dropping pins, and then I'll go out there and physically, you know, check them by getting some boots on the ground. Of course, I'm looking for where the deer might be coming from. If it looks like good bedding, where they're going to, where, you know, the food source, if there's ag fields this way or whatever. And I'm trying to figure out where they're going mainly in the afternoons. I don't care to hunt too much in the mornings. I like to sleep in, number one, but I don't see a lot of deer in the mornings. You know, every once in a while you catch them coming back from a food source or whatever, but my strategy is concentrate on where the deer are going to get up from their bed in the day, in the evening, and head to eat. That's kind of what I'm looking for. So,
well, I've seen a lot of younger deer moving in the mornings, even like late, like that doe that Cali track last year, that was well over an hour past sunrise. Yeah.
You'll kind of see that all year long. I see it. And like I said, I've hunted in the mornings, and I don't see a whole lot of deer. But typically when I do see them in the mornings, it's not right at daybreak. It's usually, you know, hours after light. I mean, it's well light. Occasionally, depending on where I'm at, the few bucks that I've seen in the morning have been right at daybreak. I mean, like right as it's barely light enough to even see. But as far as the younger deer and the does, I tend to see those later in the morning. And I'm not really worried about hunting morning times, especially now that I'm kind of taking some cues from Dan Infault. You know, he basically, I loved it when he said that he doesn't hunt a lot of mornings and stuff. And I'm like, good, I'll just sleep in. So I'm going to concentrate in the afternoons, and because I'm concentrating more on buck bedding. And I can tell you now, I'm not going to wait for a 150 or 160 buck to come out of a bed. If I'm that bed that I found yesterday that I think looks dynamite, you know, when I sneak in there, if a nice solid 8-pointer or something comes through there, you know, I'm going to shoot him. I'm not going to be waiting for it. I just want to, right now, I'm just playing with the strategy to see how it plays out. It's like if you just get into turkey hunting, you're not waiting for a monster gobbler. You're probably going to shoot a Jake your first year. You're just filling out this strategy. And I've hunted, like I said, I've hunted marshes for over a decade now, or almost a decade, I guess. And my strategy, you know, I know how to hunt them. It's just now I'm just kind of concentrating on a different subject matter of how to hunt them.
Well, and the other thing too, I mean, when you think about a public place like that, it's like, how many beds could you go out there and find if you had a week to go and look? Dozens and dozens and dozens, right? How many
a week?
How many 150, 160 bucks are out there? Probably not that many. So it's like, how many of those beds that you do find, you think, hey, I just found the big buck bed. Like, statistically, it's probably not a giant.
No.
And even Dan, he's, you know, like, he's mastered this for so many years. He'll still put in an awful lot of hunts. I don't think a lot of guys realize how much time he puts in before he
probably hunts
gets it done.
As much during deer season as I hunt for turkey in the spring. So I hunted, 33 days this past year.
Yeah.
He's probably hunting at minimum of that many during the fall.
And so it's like, it's not good odds hunting, but it's your best odds potentially at those older class deer on that type
of land. That's kind of my thing. I'm not worried about a 150 or 160 or bigger deer. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, out of all the beds, like you said, I've found hundreds of them out there already. And I'm trying to narrow down to which ones are bucks using.
Yeah.
And which ones are maybe an older buck, at least three and a half years old or older. So I may hunt these beds in a nice 8 or, you know, bigger come out. There's a good possibility I'll hunt these beds and a little forker comes walking out. But, you know, we'll see this fall how that plays out. I got to figure out a way to film my hunts this fall. And I don't want to tote a big camera arm in there. And I'm going to probably concentrate on action cameras mainly. You may not get to see a tight shot of the deer, but I kind of want to document this just to, it's nice to go back and watch these, the footage of it.
Well, I'll show you this, after we're done recording this, I'll show you the setup that I got for no camera arm. It's, you probably could do something pretty similar with the cameras you got. And mine are pretty specialized for what they do, but.
Well, I'm prepared to purchase another one if it comes to that, just to maybe get some higher, like I know you run one on your headband there. It'd be nice to have a little mini camcorder that, you know, may not be the top of the line, but can get something you can zoom in or whatever, even if it's a bow mounted type deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played around with all that kind of stuff. So I'll have some good insight for what you might want to try or what you think might work, but actually doesn't really work that well. Because I'm in the same boat. I hate carrying that camera arm in there. Hopefully I can get Sam to record some of my hunts this year.
It'd be nice to have someone else to help carry some deer out for you. Yeah, my biggest problem is not carrying the stuff in there. It's breaking it down at the end of each hunt.
Because you're always doing it in the dark.
Yeah.
And it's like you're...
And then when it gets cold, you got to deal with all that metal. And it's enough to hang a stand and, you know, and all the other gear you have. And I'm really going, I'm minimizing what I carry this year. Last year, last couple of years, I've been carrying this big pack, and it's a nice pack, but it on its own empty feels like it weighs about 10 pounds. And it's got a meat shelf and all this stuff, and I'm prepared when I go out there, if I had to kill a deer, mm-hmm. I've got all the gear in there to clean this deer and hopefully carry most of it out in one trip. And I got thinking about it. It's like, you know, you go out there for 20 times and you kill a deer on one of those times. And I'm lugging this big, heavy, all this gear in this pack every time.
Just leave it at the truck?
Just leave it at the truck. Go in there. If you kill a deer, then make one extra trip back to the truck to get it, you know. I mean, you're only going to have to do that once or twice a season. And then you can make your, like right now, I plan on carrying my bow, my stand, and a little, I don't know if I'm going to have a fanny pack or what right now, but it's going to be something for a drink and a flashlight. You know, that's basically it. And
it's like kill mode for turkey walk out with a shotgun.
Yeah, I dump the turkey vest and everything. I'm basically going to carry my bow and my stand is basically what I'm carrying out there. And it'll make it so much more enjoyable, I think, than what it's been like. Not that I don't enjoy it. Just, you know, anytime you work so hard all summer, make the deer hunting a little easier, I guess.
Yeah, well, late season too, sometimes I'd like to hunt on the ground more often because you don't have to worry about climbing down when your hands are numb and stuff.
And I did that last year.
You get a little chilled, up, shooting lights done, get up, start walking, warm back up.
I did that last year and I ditched the stand, and I had some private land in Wisconsin that I had access to hunt too, and even there he had some preset ladder stands, and so I was leaving my hang-on set up in the truck. I'd walk down there and find me a spot next to an old fallen oak tree, mm-hmm. set up beside it. And I used to hunt a lot on the ground when I was younger. I don't know why I got away from doing it so much. I mean, I occasionally do it anyway, but it just seems like I got to the point where I always wanted to be up where I can see. And if you just put yourself in a good spot to see deer and just stay alert, you can hunt on the ground and it's so much easier. Like you said, as soon as it's, you know, you're a little chilly and it's the end of the light, just get up and start walking. You warm up in a hurry. You don't have to sit there and piddle with screwing steps or
Well, and you made a good point. It depends so much on what you can see. I mean, you're hunting a lot of grass and stuff. You get up 10, 15 feet and you can see so much better.
Yeah.
You can see them coming, you know, well before you would be able to on the ground.
Yeah.
But then there's other times you get those wide open islands where you're tucked in on the edge, kind of right on the cattails.
And yeah, you don't need to be in a tree. Sometimes a tree can hinder you with the limbs and stuff and shot opportunities, where if you're on ground level, as long as you set up where they can't see or don't bust you, you can shoot for 30 or 40 yards in any direction because there's no limbs down on
that. But it seems to always happen is you get those spots where there's just a little bit of elevation. And even sometimes, like when you're turkey hunting on the edge of a field, you go sit down against a tree, you can't see anything.
Yeah.
The hill has there's a little lip to the edge of the field.
You
some of those islands
more.
Are the same type of way. You get on the edge where you kind of got some cover and you sit down and you can't see even
those
the
islands,
other side of the island.
Most of them are mounds.
Yeah.
They're not just up and flat. And one of the small islands I found, and I've kind of ruled that out that I'm gonna hunt it now. It's got deer sign on it, and you can see where they laid down in the grass and bedding. But I just don't think those are going to be very productive. But I did when I went and scouted it. I sat down in the edge in the bushes, and I'm like, this is a perfect spot. I can see either way. And when a deer comes down, I'm thinking recurve because I'm gonna try to use my recurve this year. I'm like, as soon as it comes by me, I can. And hopefully that's the way it works out. But, you know, that's an exception. Most of the times, like you said, those islands are a big mound, and you can't shoot very far in those.
Mm-hmm. So what are you looking for other than beds right now to kind of say, like we touched on food a little bit, where you said, like, you're looking at maps to see, like, what's close.
Yeah.
But how's that playing into you right now when you find a bed and you're thinking, I think he's feeding that maybe on these forbs and grasses now, he might hit this field, he might hit these oak trees, like how much is that
plant? A lot of it's a big guess, and one of the strategies I do when I'm out there scouting is I ride around. Now, you can see on the maps where ag fields are on mm-hmm. private a lot of times. I'll ride around. If I can see them from the road, I actually drop a pin and mark what's grown in there this year.
And beans or corn or whatever.
And this has got, and then some fields are split up into like rye or whatever grass, tall grass is growing in between. Like one spot has corn and then all this grass. And so I'm marking all that on there. And then over here, there's oaks and there's so much food out there. A deer's like a goat. I mean, they can basically eat anything. I've seen them eat cattails. I've seen them eat, stinging nettles. You know, I've seen them eat all that stuff, the tops of the nettles, even in the summer when they don't need to be eating something like that. But I guess they know what part they can eat. But anyway, I'm a little off subject. I'm not so concerned about what they're browsing on or nibbling on. I'm looking for the main food sources. Okay, deer, no matter how much abundance of food they have out there, if there's a bean field, they end up in the bean field at night, or they end up in these hardwoods at night at some point. So I kind of look for what's the main attraction. Mm-hmm. If you start trying to worry about all the browse and what's the name of the stuff they eat, all the forbs and grasses or whatever else is out there, anyway, you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to, because it's everywhere.
It's everywhere right now, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in the winter, when the fall comes, you're going to, you know, it's going to be crops and oaks and stuff, and you want to concentrate on. One thing I mentioned in one of these my scouting videos I did recently was a maple tree, and I think I mentioned to you before, it seems like anytime I can find a lone maple tree, especially in these marshes I hunt, like right on the edge of a marsh, it always seems to have good deer activity in the fall, right when the leaves are turning and they're dropping. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's like a sugar maple and the leaves are sweet to them or what the attraction is. I've always had good luck around maple trees as far as seeing deer. It seems like the does come in, and it's mostly does and stuff, yearlings I see, but the deer seem to love eating on this. So anytime I find a maple tree by itself, like one of those islands, I found a big maple all by itself, I'll drop a pin. That may be a spot if I just want to shoot a doe or put some meat in the freezer, that I target a trail next to that maple. Otherwise, my main thing right now this year, because I am kind of more concentrating on bedding, is looking for where the main dry land is, because I think that's where they're going to head. You know, there could be, you know, a tamarack tree or a willow tree out here that has a bed under it. Where's the trail that goes by it? And you can see this on maps a lot of times, but if I was there in person, I also marked the trails of which way they were going. And I take pictures all the time mm-hmm. with my phone. I have the GPS on my phone, and those photos I can open up in Google Photos, and it shows me exactly on Google Maps where that picture was taken. And it's private, so no one else can see it, of course. But I'm looking at, okay, what trail is this deer likely to hit, you know, based on what's down that trail, like a big mainland over here. Even if it's near housing development, you know, mm-hmm. deer love to go up in there and nibble on the bird feeders or whatever else they have, the people have, their gardens and whatnot. So that's another thing I concentrate on. So I'm basically trying to figure out where's a deer going to head once it gets out of bed. And then my strategy is, okay, where do I need to set up to intercept this deer? And so that's kind of how right now I'm looking at it. My main thing right now is finding them. And I'm taking pictures of specific trees while I'm there. And then, you know, as I accumulate it, which I'm getting close to finishing accumulating all this, I've hit a bunch of public lands tracks. I've got two more I want to hit before mm-hmm. the summer's out. And then all these 30 or 40 spots that I have on there, I'm going to pick the higher odds, what I think are higher odds spots, and those are the ones I'm going to target.
Yeah. Do you have particular spots that you're kind of saying, hey, these are going to be north wind access spots, these are going to be south wind access spots, or are you just kind of collecting what are
right
the best
now,
spots
I'm,
right
I'm
now?
I'm not worried about the wind. I do give that a thought. It's like some of these spots I was at this island, like, okay, if the main thing is how do I approach to hunt that spot to begin with? Wind's irrelevant. How do I get in there quietly? And then I get to think about the wind, and the predominant wind is usually north, northwest, or something like that. Occasionally you get a south or east wind. But I'm not really giving that a whole lot of thought right now. I'm basically just gathering up all my mm-hmm. spots, and then I will probably, I don't know if I'll color code them, or I'll do something on my mapping app that I'll say, or my list, or wherever I have it all stored, and I'll have all these stands listed. Okay, these are good south wind stands. That way I can just look at the weather for that day or the next day and say, okay, this is the list I have to choose from. It kind of narrows down to keep my mind from getting cluttered with too much info.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to try and hit it hard early season? And are you going to hope to like try and fill your tag early? Or are you planning on you're going to spread these hunts the course of the season and try to you know stay fresh and current and hope that those beds are being used throughout the year?
Well, ideally, I'd like to be successful early on.
Yeah.
And I want to get at least 4 or 5 hunts in, you know, with sightings, or I'd like to kill at least, you know, 2 or 3 deer this year, a buck and a couple of does for the freezer. Last year I only got 1 doe, and that's because I tracked a lot, and you know, that doesn't go very far, you know, 1 deer,
right.
When you eat it often. But I'd like to at least kill two or three deer, minimum of 2 deer this year for the freezer. I think if I have a successful September, that I'm not going to be so, you know, hard up to hunt the rest of the season. I'll probably dedicate more time tracking. On the days when it gets slow, then I might slip out. Especially I've got Wisconsin as an option too to hunt, you know, so.
Well, heaviest weeks of tracking are probably first 2 weeks of November, last week October, right?
What's that? When it gets close to the rut, that's when tracking calls skyrocket. And I mean, like I was on the road last year, and the year before I did it, I was, you know, I'm off during the week. I get my 40 hours during the weekend, 3 days. And so I'm off during the week to track and to hunt. Most of my calls come in on the weekend, of course, but except for during the rut, because everyone's taking their rut vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets hectic. I mean, I'm driving to a track and I'm getting calls and I'm trying to jot stuff down. A lot of times I have to pull over so I can write this down. Before I can even get driving again, I'm getting another call that may be in the area. And so I'm, you know, you're between tracking and handling calls to go for your next track and get all the information. It gets hectic. And so, I mean, you pretty much have to give up hunting for that rut period, or, you know, there's no way you can manage.
So you definitely want to try and get done as early as you can.
And I like warmer weather. I'm from the South, so I don't like being out there when it's cold. Now, I've hunted in 10-degree weather and it's windy, and I've toughed it out through that sort of stuff. And I hunted, last year, the year before, I think last 2 years I hunted, which would be the rut period, I guess, like November 10th or 11th, somewhere in that area, and I saw deer and stuff. It was nice, and it was those mornings that it was, you know, 15 or 20 degrees, but no wind, and it was sunny. I can deal with those. I don't like when it gets super cold.
The 15 mile an hour north wind.
And overcast. count me out. I mean, at least with tracking, you're moving when you're tracking, and so you stay warm. The only thing, you get the sniffles a lot when you're out there, your nose runs. But otherwise, if I can get it done, I'd said by September. I mean, even if I go into October. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy, like, when you get close to Halloween.
Yeah.
And that time of the fall of hunting, I really like that the scrapes are popping up everywhere and the rubs. The deer, the bucks are really starting to get in the mood. I enjoy that, but, you know, my biggest enjoyment is the strategy right now, the chess game, because that's what it is almost with these buck bedding. You're, okay, here's where I think he's going to be, or one could be. How can I get in there and get in position to get this specific deer? I don't know which deer it is, but I know, whereas the way I've hunted in the past, just travel routes, it's like any deer could come down there, now you just go set up and wait. Where this is more of a game, like not a game, but, you know, a strategy, like in turkey hunting, where I roosted a bird the evening before down with this guy that was from Illinois this past season. He came up to hunt. We got him to gobble in the evening. We went back to the room. I'm looking at maps and looking at topos. Okay, where would he most likely be roosted? You know, I didn't know exactly where it was, and I kind of guessed he was on this point. You know, now we got to get in there the next morning. It's a private land boundary. We got to avoid that. It was a whole big strategy. And then the next morning, he was roosted right where I thought he was. He flew down and walked right up to us and killed him. So that's kind of what I'm applying this year. I want to take that strategy. It's so much more enjoyable than just sitting there watching a trail where deer are just going to come by, or you hope they come by.
But. Yeah. That's why I kind of like it too. And I think that's why also instead of just focusing on one tract of land over the last, you know, 5-10 years, I've kind of, like you, I got a huge library on my I had to start deleting waypoints on my Onyx because I had too many waypoints saved. Like, they capped me at 1,500. I couldn't save any more waypoints.
I've seen your maps.
I had to start deleting stuff.
They're crazy. Even Aaron Warbritton mentioned to me about how, either me or he's on one of the videos, he mentioned how much information you store in your apps. You're dropping pins for every little thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to some it might be overkill. And I'm sure if you looked at mine, you can't even see like an island when you're zoomed out for all the pins that are on there. And then when you zoom in, it's like, all right, here's a maple, here's a rub, here's a scrape. And I found it again this year, you know, 2 years in a row, and mm-hmm. I put the date on there, you know, here's a trail. I mean, there's a lot of pins on that, and it helps you, you know, when you, it's better to have too much information sometimes, but it also can hurt you. But I'd rather have more than I need than to wish that I'd been more thorough in my scouting when I was actually out there on that island.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Yeah, a lot of times I try to keep it even somewhat simple on the mapping side of things, where I'll mark potential beds and potential tree stand spots, and I'll have those with certain waypoints, and then get out there, confirm whether, once they're confirmed, then I change the waypoint to something else, and then I might move the tree stand, you know, mm-hmm. 30 yards to where the actual good tree is, and then, you know, draw the little access trail. So a lot of times, most of the stuff on my map, if I have a white oak, I'll mark that.
Yeah.
But it's just that simple. But then you zoom out and you look at 30,000 acres,
yeah,
it looks like it's just solid color because there's so many of those types of scenarios mapped out.
Yeah, I think if you're, what we're doing is if we broaden our areas and pick specific spots, even if it is multiple chunks, I think it'll be more beneficial than like I've done in the past and maybe you've done. Like, I would hunt this one chunk of public, and that's where I spent my whole mm-hmm. season. I was hunting this stand, and I'd go over here, and, you know, and especially if I saw, you know, an area that I thought was really good, I spent a lot of time in there, and then a lot of times I didn't see anything when I was out there, or I'd see another hunter, and that kind of somebody's hunting this area also, and it kind of just, you know, takes the air out of my sails. And so this year, I think, with so many, even the different public tracks, but having specific good spots that we think might be good spots that you can just fall back on. And it's always something new. You're not looking at the same trees or a little opening in the woods and that you've hunted for 2 days straight, and now you're just sitting there like this, looking around like, oh, why am I even here? I'm not going to see anything. Every time I go to a new spot, and that's the same with turkey hunting, I can go out of state. A lot of people ask me, how do you pick your spots? And I'm like, well, I look for something that just looks turkey, you know, what does, if it has all the elements. And then I go in there and hunt. It may be the worst piece of public in the world, but the fact that I don't know that, I go in there with a lot of optimism and I'm in a good mood about it. And I think by having all these spots, that each day that I hunt, it's a new spot. It's a new day of hunting. I'm going to have that optimism. I'm going to be there, you know, on alert, waiting for a deer to pop out at any moment.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have all those options mapped out for an A, B, and C, even if you haven't scouted it on foot. Because there's been times where I marked this spot that looks super remote, looks really good. It's got a lot of the textbook type of stuff that you would look for. And then make this big grand scheme, take this perfect access route in there. And I come to find out there was some non-marked access trail that four trucks use, and it's just the sun
been
comes
there.
Up and it's loaded with hunters and hunter signs and hardly any deer. It's like, yeah, we'll just cross all that stuff off the map.
That happened to me this past turkey season. I climbed this hill and went up this 45-degree mountain almost, and I get to this top, and there's an access trail that goes wraps around, snakes around the backside. It would have been so much easier. I'm like, what in the world? You know, but, you know, you couldn't see it on the map. It wasn't identified. And so, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I like about hunting marshes. It's flat. You don't have to go up any hills. I mean, the only thing, trouble is walking in a muck, but I'd rather do that than walk up hills like in the bluff country.
The other thing I don't like about the marsh is the poison sumac. Although
I've got it on my arms. I don't know. You probably can't see it. But
you don't get it. You don't get it that bad.
No.
The last time we went out together, it looked like I had Popeye with a sunburn.
Yeah. I used to get bad allergic reactions to poison oak when I was younger, and I don't know if my immune system, as I got older, has done some, changed. But now poison oak, I crawled through it one time turkey hunting, and it was a turkey I was after, and I looked down and saw that I was crawling in it, and I was like, I don't care. I'm going to, you know, I'll itch a little bit. I'm good at this turkey. And I hardly got anything. And it's been like that for years now. It hardly affects me. And then we got in that poison sumac, and it itched my arms a little bit in a few bumps, but it tore you up. And
yeah.
And then I just got into it again out there scouting. I was careful trying to avoid it, but I must have missed a few and rubbed against it. It's broke out a little bit, but it's not severe. It's just around my wrist and stuff, and just itches a little bit. But
yeah, I've got pretty much a mental note of anything and everything that could possibly cause my skin to break out, because I'm pretty set. Like, you know, all the poison whatevers, wild parsnip.
Yeah, that's
a big one.
That's the one thing I don't know how to identify wild parsnips, and I don't think I've encountered it, and I hope I don't, because yeah. Apparently it's pretty bad.
I got it a couple times, and it's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's, you got to get the liquid on your, or get it on your skin, and then expose it to the sun, and then it's
chemical
like,
reaction.
It's like pouring hot grease on your arm.
Yeah. I mean, it never hurt. Whenever I had it, there was no
just
pain associated. It didn't
blister.
Really itch that bad, but yeah, you got just monster blisters.
That's what I'm
blisters.
Saying. It makes it look like somebody had poured hot grease on it. Maybe not feel like that,
yeah,
but
so it looks like burns. It's like a chemical burn. And you get a little bit of scarring from it, too.
Yeah, so.
Lasts for a couple weeks.
Hopefully I don't ever have to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, anything else that is scouting related that you're either looking forward to doing or think is noteworthy?
Yeah, the one thing that I'm surprised I haven't found, I've been looking for a lot of old rubs. I've found some.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you think as many rubs as produced every fall, they would be scarred up on the trees, you know, and I'm not finding a whole lot of that. And that's got me kind of worried in some of these areas where I find a bed that, you know, even some of these beds I know are buck beds. There's a rub next to it, an old rub, but I'm not seeing them. If you're going down the trail to the woods, I'm not seeing any, one or two here and there.
I think that's super area specific and could be indicative of what's there in terms of age structure. Because there's some areas I go to where I know that, like you said, I'm finding buck beds, but there's just not a lot of rubs. And there's certain areas where it's rubbed up more than others. Where it's just like the specific cover type or certain size and type of trees that will always have rubs on them. But then there's other areas where the place is just torn up.
Yeah.
And if that's just
every single tree.
If it's just a competition thing, like a different, like when we went to Southeast Minnesota, some of the spots we're in were like that, where it was torn up everywhere.
There's a much higher deer density down that way, obviously, than up here. Where did I see the deer density for one of the areas I hunt a few years back, and it wasn't great. I mean, it was okay. That's one of the things that concerns me, though. Some of these places I hunt, you see a lot of deer sign. It's not tremendous, but obviously there's deer out there because there's beds and there's tracks. But a lot of these areas I hunt have not only a lot of hunting pressure from the public, because it is around the metro for the most part, within an hour in any direction. So you got, and plus there's a lot of people outside the metro. So there's potential of a lot of hunting pressure there. But then some of these have private land. Because they're marshes, they have tower stands right on the border.
Yeah.
And they can shoot in here. And you think, okay, how many deer actually survive in this thing that make it to the next year? Because one of the ones I'm going out to scout next week, that I haven't hunted in a couple of years, but I used to hunt there. And I killed a few deer in there. But I went out there in... I guess, was it November or later? It was like 10 degrees that morning, and I hunted for a while, and then I was walking out in the marsh, just kind of walking around, and I found 6 gut piles from gun season. And the gun season wouldn't last a week or two. And I'm like, if I stumbled on 6 gut piles just by happen chance, how many deer got killed on this property? I mean, it must have been a pile of them. So, I mean, it gets you thinking, how many deer are actually surviving in this one particular area? And maybe, I'm sure there's a deer every once in a while that makes it to an older age and you get a bigger buck. But You know, that's the only kind of thing in my back of my mind is, am I going to go out there and even though there's deer sign, is it the same five deer trumping around this place over the course of a week? That
well, that's a trail cameras can hope that's the intent. Hopefully they get you that data.
Yeah, and I got some private land that I'm that I have access to hunt. I hunted it last year and shot my doe, and that was kind of the reason I went up there, because just from tracking, I didn't have a whole lot of time. I was like, I'll just go hop up and stand. There seemed to be a lot of deer there, mm-hmm. and I shot a doe. And I just went and put cameras at it today. I put four cameras out, I think. There is a little bit of a creek with some cattail-type terrain that I'm really looking forward to possibly hunting. There's a good trail crossing on the creek, and I just love that. I don't know what it is about a cattail marsh. I guess because a deer can just pop up anywhere. Because, I mean, they could be laying anywhere out there.
And you can almost always hear them before you see
yeah,
them.
Yeah, exactly. And they feel safer there. And then, and so there's a possibility of all-day action, really, in some of these places. Even though they have crop fields on this private and hardwoods and stuff, I'm looking to hunt that because I think it's going to be a good travel route and stuff. And so, you know, I've got that to follow on to. But I, last year, it took him, the landowner, or the guy that has the rights to hunt it, kept inviting me up there and come on man, come up here and hunt. I'm like, I don't know, something about public land that keeps drawing me to it. I don't know the challenge or whatever, but I don't want to be a snob to hunting private. I will hunt it, obviously. but how much will I get on that private this year? I don't know. It's kind of a little drive for me, but and it, the hunting's obviously good there, but there's nothing like the, especially with all the work I put in so far this summer scouting these yeah. public spots. I want to.
That's just it. You get more. It's more of a rewarding feeling knowing that you put in that
work. I'm invested. Yeah. If I go in there and do all this scouting this summer and then don't hunt, then I feel like I just wasted all my time. So I kind of, and mentally, I have to hunt it some to make my work this summer worth it. So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's for the rest of the summer. Like I said, I only got a couple more properties to hunt or scout, and then I'm not going to do a whole lot of scouting other than that. I mean, I may, on the private, may change cameras out and check cameras every once in a while or something. Maybe go pre-hang a stand in a spot that I think's a likely good spot and let it sit there until season comes in. But that's basically right now, I'm just picking specific trees, and next week it might be the last week I do that, and then it'll be September, mid-September before I get in the woods again.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording, that a lot of that stuff you're doing now, the best time to do it is in February, yeah. March time frame, because yeah, you can get the same information, you can see better, and you're not busting your balls through all that.
Yeah, you showed me your drone footage from March, and I kick myself because the last couple of years I've been meaning to get out there, but you know, with my turkey hunting and my video on my turkey hunt, so for my YouTube channel, you know, that's when I'm getting all fired up for turkey, and I'm thinking turkey. Yeah. My deer's not even on the radar. I've got shows I go to in January or February or whatever, and in March I'm turkey hunting already in Florida. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you were out there in March deer scouting, and here I am out there turkey hunting. And last thing I want to do is scout, but I'm kicking myself like right now because you know I see your drone footage, and I'm like, man, it would have been so much easier to be out there scouting. And I'm out there sweating right now and going through muck, and the deer flies are horrendous, mm-hmm. and the mosquitoes are biting me, and then you're getting into the poison sumac, and I'm like, life would have been a lot easier if I'd just done it then. But then what would I do during the summer?
Fish.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I like to get it to the point where the only time I have to go out in the woods in the summer to do deer scouting is if there's someplace new and I just can't wait until the season. I got to figure out I got to see what it looks like. I got to see if there's somebody you got to stand back there, or if there's scent wicks, or if it just looks really good, or if it's wide open, or if it's super thick. Stuff that you just can't really get from looking at an aerial photo.
Yeah, I've liked what I've found so far in my scouting this summer. I've only found one spot that had human sign. And like I said, that one was a deer stand, like, 30 feet up in a tree, and obviously it looks like something there's perched so they can hunt the marsh during gun season. I mean, it wasn't put in a strategic area to watch a trail.
I see a lot of that type of stuff where you got those Yeah. Those stands. And
who knows how long that stand's been there, because the screwing steps that were in the tree look like they'd been
grown over.
Yeah, they're starting to grow over. And either he hunts it every year, or somebody put it up and never returned to it, and it's been there for two or three seasons.
Yeah, and that's one of the only issues with people leaving stands out there is you see a stand and it's like you got to kind of evaluate, like, does this look like a stand that likely will get used? And sometimes I just look at the deer sign around there and try to evaluate that. Like, if I find a stand like that and it looks kind of old and there's a bunch of, like, really good deer sign, I figure he's probably not hunting there that much.
I found a good hunting spot next to the stand, or not far from it, 40 yards from it. And after looking at the stand and evaluating that it's been there a while, and judging by where it was placed, it was probably a gun season stand later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't deter me that if I decide to hunt that location, it's not going to bother me that it's there. I'll just walk.
But it does kind of stick in your mind that if it gets closer to gun season, it's like, oh, that guy might be coming out here. I'm going to probably hunt a different spot.
Yeah. I'd probably hit one of those locations like the first couple weeks of the season, mm-hmm. and then abandon it. Obviously, the one spot I found where I think there's a buck bed right on the end of an island, I got 2 points, I could watch it. That's going to be a one or two and done deal. I may, depend on the wind, hunt one of the points, hopefully get eyes on deer, and then it may not come the next day, but maybe come back, you know, a week later and do the same thing. Mm-hmm. If I don't see a deer there, you know, maybe even after the second sit, walk out there and look to see if the bed has even been used since I found it. I mean, to me it looked like there was some greenery growing in it, but it was, the ground was so bare and packed down from years of use or constant use that the vegetation was having trouble growing there. So it didn't look like it was being used right now, but it definitely looked like something it might be used this fall or you know, as deer season approaches.
Were there oaks next to that spot?
Yeah, just on the inland where the point that I'd be hunting. There was a white oak and some red oaks.
That could be one of those things where he might not be bedding there now because he might have a better food source right now.
Yeah, but when the acorns start dropping, he'll bed there to hit the acorns at dark. So maybe that's not a necessary opening day, but an opening week stand at some point in the first week of the season.
Well, last year the acorns were just raining opening day.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible, the amount of acorns. I mean, I wouldn't say it's horrible. I enjoy seeing a good mass, because I know that means that the deer and the turkeys and all have a food source to help them get through these tough winters up here. So, you know, one of my strategies years ago was to look for that white oak that was dropping and no other oaks were. I never had much success finding that lone white oak. If one's dropping, there's a lot of them dropping, it seems like. Yeah, you can find one that they will come to, it seems like. But nowadays I just look, okay, are the acorns dropping, and which ones, the white oaks, are they dropping pretty good, you know? And that, on that situation where that bed is and those 2 points, there's a white oak on one that looks big enough to produce acorns, and then there's another white oak on the other one that looks too young. It might produce one or two acorns, but that's about it. But there's more oaks up in the mainland. In this situation, I got to figure out which point is he most likely to travel to based on, you know, the situation. And that's what I'm concerned with. And I think I know which one it has.
Well, I think that's one of those spots where you set up in the first point, whatever point is closer to your access, I would think.
That's what I'm saying.
Based on the wind. And then
whichever one doesn't ruin your chance for a second sit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the one closest to my access, because he either comes by and gets shot, or he goes to the other one. And then the next time I go, I'll go past the first one and I'll go to the second one. Knowing my odds, he'll go to the
first one. It's another shot for the day before him blow out.
And then, go running out across the marsh.
Yep.
Oh, if I see him head that way, I just get out of my stand and go boogie up to the woods. And
yeah.
Or shot a flashlight and make him spook off.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I mean, unfortunately for me, and well, fortunately and unfortunately, that whole first week I'm pretty much gonna miss.
Yeah, you're going to be Colorado. Elk hunting.
Yeah.
Dang elks. Yeah, I'd like to get out there and do that something 1 year. But if I go out there, I'm gonna have to have some horses or something to pack these things out. I just can't see myself packing 3 miles of elk 3 miles out, you know, yeah. four trips.
It can be.
That's quite an ordeal.
Yeah, you almost, doing a solo elk, you got to have the right setup for that too, no matter how good a shape I think you're in.
Turkey hunting is basically elk hunting for feathered creatures, you know, so yeah. I'll just stick to turkey. Yeah, my, you know, I work weekends, and that's usually when the opening day kicks off, and I usually don't take a day off to hit that opening week, because then what happens is I go opening day, and I'm out there with everybody.
Yeah.
And then I have to, like, if sometimes I swap with a coworker, I'll have them work the weekend, and I'll work a weekday for them.
Mm-hmm.
Then the weekdays come, and I don't have but like 2 weekdays off because I swapped, and then I'm kicking myself. I could have had the days when no one's out here. So,
yep.
I'm excited to hunt some of these buck beds, so I'm really tempted to either take the day off or swap with a coworker this year. But at the same time, I'd be nice to get out there. Some of these spots, I don't think I'm going to have to worry about other hunters.
I mean, that's just it. If nobody else is hitting those very pinpoint spots,
I can wait till,
it doesn't matter if it's
The only thing I'd go out there is because I can't wait any longer. I'd take the day off. It's not because I'm worried about somebody's going to get to it first type of deal. So if I can just be patient. Normally what I do is as it gets closer, I look at the long-term forecast. If the forecast in the weekend looks better than the weekdays, then I'll swap or vice versa. So that's kind of my strategy there. I don't like hunting in the rain.
Neither do your cameras.
Well, I just don't like hunting in the rain. I don't like getting wet. You know, like turkey season, a lot of people are like, oh, you can't kill on the couch. I'm like, I enjoy sitting on the couch dry more than I would sitting out in the woods wet. So I'll watch turkey hunting then. So what is your strategy this year? Basically the same or?
Yeah, so when I get back, I mean, for the months of basically that last week of September through October, basically just be bed hunting, where based on all the scouting we've been doing, you know, just island hopping for the most part.
And is that how you're going to attack it all season?
No,
up into the rut?
Not so basically up through, you know, that end of October period, that's what I'll mainly be doing. And if it's like the stuff we've been scouting, it'll be island hopping and just kind of going in deeper mm-hmm. each time, depending on whether it's a, you know, north wind that day or southerly wind, that'll determine where I would go and how deep I'd go in. But then I think as it gets closer to that last week of October, first week of November, because this week the Minnesota gun season's a little bit later. It's not early like it was last year.
They moved it back?
Yeah, it's like the 9th or 10th, I think, opener this year.
When was it last year? The 3rd?
3rd, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's nice then.
So I think whereas that earlier season it's as close as you can get to the bed, try and scouting out like on the fly to find the food source, right? Like hit that island that you wanted to get to, and if it looks hot, there's an oak tree dropping, like hunt it, and if not, just move to the next island. Whereas like as it gets to that last week of October, then I start looking for more like oh, there's a scrape that just popped up on this island, like I'm gonna hunt it now. Versus if like, oh, there's not that.
So yeah, I guess that's kind of the strategy that Dan talks about, finding that hot sign to know that the deer's moved in there now. And I guess that I'll adjust mine to that also if I'm in a spot and I see. One of the things, you know, like you were mentioning, okay, you're progressively going to move in farther.
Yeah.
There's some of these spots I've found that has okay looking bedding on these islands, but the really good stuff is on the last one.
So it's like, do you just go straight
to
that
last one?
Do I
jump straight in there, or do I risk him actually being on one of these lesser islands?
Well, I think you just gotta, when you go in there the first time, because like for one, you're not gonna have 60 days in the field to knock these off one by one.
Yeah.
So that's gonna play into it. So I think you go into the first one and you just observe, like, is there anything fresh?
Attack.
Is there fresh tracks on it, the big tracks? If not, you just keep walking to that second. You keep going until the sign says, I need to hunt this one.
One thing I'd like to figure out, you know, is when people use this strategy is how do they exit their stand? You never see anybody talk about that at dark when you get down.
Yeah. Well, if it's a spot and I'm not going back to for at least a couple of weeks, I won't even worry about it. I'll literally toss the climbing sticks down.
I'm usually pretty noisy anyway, getting out of a tree in the evening.
Yeah, headlamp, like doesn't matter. If I'm going to be maybe making a slight change, like maybe I'm moving over like 100 yards for the next day or something to hit like a little different bedding off like a, you know, secondary point or something, then I'll try and be a little bit more stealthy.
Yeah, I mean, because that's one of the things I've always thought about. Okay, say you're hunting a bed that you've crept into, and it's 60 yards away, and maybe you heard something get up, but it didn't come down the trail you're at. But then you didn't know where it went. You know, you heard it moving, but now where's it at? And it's dark. Do you make a lot of noise and so he doesn't bust you, or do you try to sneak out of there and then they bust you anyway? I mean, what is
kind of... I don't know if there's a good answer for it.
Yeah.
You just got to get out there.
Usually, I've always...
Probably try and be stealthy.
My thing I've always done, I don't know how well this would work. I've always turned on my headlamp and just look all the way around. Look for eyes. Any deer see it? Usually they're puzzled. They're like looking up and their heads bebopping like this up in the towards the tree when you do see one, and then they run off. And I've always thought, okay, they probably didn't associate that with a hunter or a person. They just, here's a light up in the tree.
Well, so here, back to your example of you get that deer that you can hear or see or whatever, but he didn't come right underneath you. You don't know exactly where he ended up. Like, would your goal with trying to be stealthy, getting out of there, be like that you would come back to that same tree? Because what's to say that?
Well, no. Then my goal would be get out of there undetected, so I could hunt the same area, maybe not the same tree.
Yeah.
I don't want to blow him out of there where he wouldn't.
Reposition yourself to a little bit.
I'd want him to bed in that same bed again. You know. So I mean, I don't know. Like you said, this probably isn't a good answer. Anything could happen, and it being dark. A deer's persona changes, and the way they go about things changes drastically when it's pitch dark and when it's daylight.
Yeah, so I think some of that probably depends on age, class, and personality, mm-hmm. how much they're going to tolerate that or not. You might be just fine. You might be able to come back to the same. I know for a fact, I know of guys that have done a bed hunt like that, come back the next day and shoot a big deer, big old deer.
Even if it's not the same deer, another one might take that bed. But
right, I think a lot of times I like to think that, you know, if it's it has to be a totally virgin sit, and if you got your scent in there once, like, you might as well not come back to that same tree. But if you didn't come through the first night, there's never any absolutes in deer hunting. So
ideally, like in the video where Dan climbs up in his trees and he sees antlers, that's what I'd like for every buck bed to be, where I can slip them a tree 40, 50 yards away, and then by the time I get up there, I can see antlers, tines sticking up. Then I know there's one there.
There's been a couple of his videos where the deer stands up, there goes the arrow.
Yeah, that's cool. I wish he would do more videos showing his setup and out there, even if he doesn't see anything, just explaining why and what he's thinking.
Yeah, you know? Well, I think those guys that go to like the scouting workshops and stuff, I think a lot of those guys that have been to it, they say it's a big eye opener, because you get some stuff from the website and the DVDs, but actually being there
in person,
they're like, oh, I didn't realize it was this close, type of thing.
Yeah, and that, like I said, that one spot that I'm gonna be 40 yards away, but I think there's enough cover that if I do it quietly enough, I can get up there and see it. Then there's other ones that just frustrate me. Like the one that's out there in the marsh a little bit, there's a tamarack tree. There's a couple tamarack trees, and they're obviously well-worn beds. Mm-hmm. There's multiples. So I could see it one deer using, you know, based on how it feels or whatever.
Is it the same deer using multiple trees? Or
or is
it
multiple
deer
using it because it's good spots? It's tamarack with a big shelf of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there's no way to get out here to hunt this. I mean, you're anywhere from 200 yards or more from the land, and I mean, I guess you could find, if you're lucky, I didn't see any tamarack trees out there big enough to get up into, you know, maybe that's a stepladder location. And you put it right behind it, but they'd hear you. I mean, you just gotta, and there's so many trails coming out of there, which tamarack are they at in this triangle of tamaracks? And then which trail they're gonna take, and you climb, you go out there, and you stand in the marsh, and then nothing comes by you. But those are kind of frustrating to me personally, just because I know there's some good bedding there, and I don't see a logical way to attack it. So I'm still gonna think on it, because they're not far from that other one I've got to hunt. And if I hunt it and nothing shows up, I may even give that spot 2 days, you know, two attempts, maybe not 2 days back to back, and then if I come up with a strategy to hunt those out in the tamarack, out in the marsh, then go about doing that.
Yeah, those are usually those type of spots. I really like waiting until firearms, then get into a tree where you can observe and you get up 30 feet
and see someplace from a
nice
distance.
And high, so you can actually have a good panorama of some of those trails.
Yeah,
especially because there's not always cattails. It might be like that shorter grass type stuff.
Yeah, there, I did see one little clearing that was similar to that, and I could see a gun being useful in that situation. It's just, the problem is I don't gun hunt. I'm not opposed to it. I've thought about getting me a slug barrel for my turkey gun. But I usually don't even worry about gun. By the time gun season comes in, it's, you know, in November, and I'm winding down anyway mm-hmm. from hunting. I'm about had enough. I'm thinking about.
Starting
I have
to
a
plan,
switch. I have
to plan turkey trips.
Yeah, I have a switch in my head that, like, before turkey season was over the year before. Now this year I made it all the way to end of turkey season. I wasn't ready to quit turkey hunting. The year before, I think it was because I jumped a really nice buck while I was turkey hunting the last week, and I went out there. I couldn't wait for the last week of turkey season to end so I could put trail cameras out.
Yeah.
And I scouted a lot last summer, and I hunted a decent amount based on what I had to do with Cali. But by the time the season rolled in, I had scouted way too much, I think, and I wasn't feeling it like I normally would. It wasn't as exciting as when the switch turned in my head in the summer. This year, I mean, I've scouted quite a bit this year, but I'm also pacing myself. I'm finding some exciting things. Where last year I just basically found deer with trail cameras and some trails. This year I'm finding the actual bed, so that makes it really exciting to know. You know, I'm finding doe bedding too, which I'm gonna target. There's one spot I found looks like deer bedding there constantly on this little mucky island with thick debris around it. And or thick cover, and I'm like, yeah, I could see setting up right here, and if I wanted to shoot a doe, one would probably come off. So all those are making it exciting for when the season gets here to see if those strategies actually play out. So I don't know how I got on that tangent, but here we are.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do a follow-up podcast probably once you put something on the ground.
Yeah, and I'm like I said, I'm gonna try to document it. Like I've been, if anyone goes to my YouTube channel, they'll see the two scouting videos, and it may be a little boring. It just shows me walking out in the marsh and showing some of the stuff I'm finding. I wish I'd videoed yesterday's scouting where I found those beds. I had my cameras with me in my backpack, but I
probably your cell phone though, right?
I just used my cell phone and took some pictures. So when we can, I can show them on this video here on the video portion of it, some of the bedding. But yeah, I've been documenting, my scouting with cameras, and I anticipate or I plan to do the same and probably the same style with the action cameras. Show me going there, where I'm going, and maybe some mapping. You may not get mapping of where I'm actually hunting, but it'll be something similar, so it kind of give you a feel for where I'm going, and then show how it plays out. So I mean, I think I've always enjoyed filming my hunts and stuff. Deer hunting, I haven't taken as quite as serious as turkey, but I go back and look at some of, I've had turkey hunts and deer hunts all the way back from the early 2000s, and I go back sometimes and look at them, and I'm like, man, I remember this hunt here. I wish I'd videoed it also. I hate myself sometimes, but I don't hate myself, but I kick myself sometimes for not being more dedicated during deer season with the camera. I can go back. It's nice to go back and relive some hunts,
All right, so where can, obviously if people are watching the video portion, they'll know where to find your stuff, but if people are listening to this on the podcast, where, once again, can we look to find all of your various content?
Yeah, so any of my videos, my turkey hunting, which is Calling All Turkeys, that's the name of that show, and then the Cali Chronicles, the dog tracking, and then my deer hunting, I'm just calling it Public Land Whitetails, is really just the name of each playlist. That's on my YouTube channel, and you can go to YouTube and just search up Shane Simpson, and if you have, there's a musician called Shane Simpson, but mine usually pops up at the top. It's me in a kayak with a doe behind me. Otherwise, just type in Shane Simpson Hunting and it'll pop up my channel. Of course, on Facebook, I have a Facebook page for me, Calling All Turkeys, and the Cali Chronicles, all three of those. And I'm on Instagram also with Calling All Turkeys. But basically, if you find any of them, it's me posting to all three.
Yep.
So, YouTube channel is if you just want to watch the videos and stuff, that's probably where I would send you. That'd be my favorite place to go if I was looking for content, because I like watching stuff. I don't like looking at pictures and reading articles.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. We can probably call that a wrap.
Yep.